on behalf of the Wellington Jewish Community Center, and it's good to see some of you again, and welcome to all of you who are here for the first time. I also want to thank Dr. Kleinsman and Dr. Sandhu for superb presentations, and to the Emerging Abrahamic Council for putting this together. It's interesting that just a couple of weeks ago in the Washington Post, there was a column about a young lady, 29 years old, Brittany Maynard, who relocated to Oregon because she was terminally ill. She had a brain tumor which was not operable, and she had very little time left to live. And in her home state of California, it was against the law to have physician-assisted suicide. So she moved to Oregon, and there are now 5 states in the United States that allow euthanasia. There's Vermont, Oregon, Washington State, New Mexico, and Montana. Those are the 5 states that currently allow euthanasia.
That's correct.
I'm just basing this off the newspaper article, so that's it's not my error. But in any event, she relocated to be able to die on her own terms, as she put it. She didn't want to have to live with the pain and seizures until the very end, since she was terminally ill and she wasn't going to last much longer. And so she's decided on a date. She wants to live through her husband's birthday on October the 26th. And she has chosen the date, 1st of November, as the day that she will take the prescription that was given to her by her physician. So that's a choice that she made, and that was made available to her by her physician, because she relocated to Oregon, which allowed for that. Interestingly, she's Jewish. She was looking forward to celebrating Hanukkah, which she'll miss out. So she chose this path. This was reading her article and how she frames it, one cannot but sympathize for her choice, and as well as have a lot of sympathy for the law which allows for this to go through that suffering, to go through the pain, to have a life without the quality that you'd want from any life. But at the same time, we have other doctrines that we may look to determine what's the right thing to do. And our world is growing increasingly secular, and so that necessitates that we have a moral relativism. So everything shifts over time. Everything changes. And what was unacceptable yesterday becomes acceptable today, and vice versa. Things work both ways. And in places, obviously, which look to religion and to the faith, then they have more of an objective standard for what we consider to be correct, moral, or maybe we shouldn't use the term moral, because faiths generally don't address things as moral or not, rather what's permissible and what's forbidden. But it doesn't really address the notion of what's moral. So it may be the moral thing to do to allow somebody to take their own life when their life has lost the quality, but the faith forbids it. That may be the case. But Judaism, like Christianity and like Islam, believes in the sanctity of human life, and man is created in God's image, and therefore it's man's duty to not only live but assist others to live. And so, as Dr. Sandhu mentioned, there are generally 2 types of physician-assisted suicide. There is active, and there is passive. And I'll be brief I'll be brief, and we can talk more about this if there's any interest in specific points later on the panel with the question and answer time. Active euthanasia to assist in the suicide or the death of any patient is unequivocally restricted by Jewish law. It's no different from killing somebody else. It's homicide. It's murder. So whether a person is in good health, full health, or will die tomorrow, as far as the religion is concerned, killing somebody is murder. There's no difference there. On the other hand, we have a whole range of more passive euthanasia, and that is either withholding treatment or enabling one to disconnecting the cables, those instruments that are keeping an individual alive. And in that area, there is some room within Jewish law for allowance of if not taking one's life, at least allowing it to end without as much suffering, and to shorten it slightly. So the parameters for that, and I won't go into great detail, but the parameters for that in general are, as listed in the Code of Jewish Law, is that you can remove an impediment to death. So there's some very interesting discussion there about some things that impede the death of a person. So the commentaries on the Code of Jewish Law write about this. They bring some examples, and it's dated. You can see how the medical perspective used to be very different back then. So if somebody was sleeping on a down pillow with feathers, then you could not remove the pillow because it was believed that feathers from certain birds assisted in keeping someone alive. Furthermore, it notes there that it's forbidden to place the keys of the synagogue under one's pillow, with the intent that that might hasten the departure to the next world. So, you know, obviously these are things which are not scientifically, they're not going to make a difference. But, you know, at that time, that was the medical perception, was that there's a lot to do with these energies. And maybe there is something to that. But that doesn't certainly, today's scholar would not look at these as things to take notice of. But another thing that the law does address is for example, it says that if somebody's chopping wood nearby, and the rhythmic blows and the sounds of the axe or the hammer, they help keep a person's heart beating because of the rhythm. So one is not obligated to continue knocking with the hammer in order to keep someone alive. If for some reason it's been determined that one's life, one's breath is linked to that. So that's the removal of an impediment. So that's permissible. To remove an impediment to death is permissible. But other areas are not. It's been discussed in scholars of the recent century as euthanasia has become something that's come up more and more. We have many more instruments and tools to keep patients alive, even artificially. Then what are the parameters, and how does Jewish law respond to that? Where's the cutoff line? Where do we say that you're allowed to disengage from that? So generally, it's the physician's responsibility to heal a patient, just as it's the patient's responsibility to do everything he can to be healed. Nevertheless, if someone is in a circumstances where he's terminally ill, he does not necessarily need to take those steps and to undergo those treatment, which will not necessarily prolong his life by a considerable amount. One is permitted to undergo such treatments which carry a great amount of risk, as long as there's a good chance that it will result in prolonging one's life. So that risk is not considered to be suicidal, even though there is a strong possibility that one will not survive the operation. At the same time, when one is being assisted by a breathing tube and on the respirator, numerous scholars came out with a ruling that if one could not breathe on his own, then one can pull out the respirator, because one is has effectively lost one's ability to live independently, and therefore one is dependent on the oxygen that's being pumped into him. And to remove that, some have permitted it in a case where it's just you're just keeping him alive without any consciousness, without any ability to actually live life. On the other hand, one of the greatest scholars in Jewish law of the previous century was a little more cautious, a little more conservative about this, and he said that in such a circumstance, one should not merely unplug the respirator. Rather, one should put in a tank of oxygen which will last only a couple of hours, and then let it deplete on its own. And once he runs out of oxygen, you haven't pulled the plug, you haven't disrupted any flow of oxygen actively. Rather, it occurs passively at that stage. So those are some examples of the parameters of Jewish law as it relates to euthanasia. So I think that's probably enough. That's probably enough. We'll go with that, and we can address any questions about that on the panel after this.